Episode 254.
There's a recent case that, you know, came down where, you know, one of the issues was, is are service advisors hourly employees, or are they exempt from the statute? And guess what? They're hourly employees. And I always tell employers, you know, if you want to save yourself some heartache, when in doubt, pay them hourly.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, automotive aftermarket professionals, to episode 254 of Remarkable Results Radio. Here's a special episode with attorney Rod Steffens as we talk employment law. And Rod has experience in the aftermarket working with ASA Northwest. Carm Capriotto here, delivering on my goal to help aftermarket professionals achieve their very own remarkable results. And this is our first attorney interview. This episode is presented by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these great aftermarket interviews. Now, when you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more, they're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com, and thank you for the support of these brands. Every podcast episode has their own show notes page. There you'll find additional bio information and the episode talking points. Now, today's show notes with Rod Steffens can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E254. Rod shares some great advice, but it is important that if you are in a human resource situation, please seek expert help. DIYing the legal side of HR is never a good idea. The value of the Weekly Academy is growing every week. Now, there's no other resource like it in the industry. A place to come for shared wisdom on a specific topic. As of this episode, there are 30 Town Hall Academies as your personal learning resource. And you can watch the video replay or listen to the audio podcast anytime. I recommend you spend some quality time with these Academy lessons. Find the archive at remarkableresults.biz/academy. Welcome to my new Facebook friends, Rich Mikado, Lucas Underwood, and Eric Riddles, and new LinkedIn connections, Kelly Hornung, Tim Bauscher, and Tom Riley. It's time for your connection. Become more of an insider and get connected. I've got one convenient place for you to go, remarkableresults.biz/social. Every possible connection's there waiting for you. Hey, just a quick tip for all podcast app users. If your version is older than July 2017, go to the App Store and do an update. A new user experience awaits you, a very powerful app that brings every interview, including the Academy podcasts, to your fingertips. Go to remarkableresults.biz/app and download. And I thank you. Now, let's meet Rod Steffens from the Steffens Law Firm. Now, I find listening to attorneys very interesting. It is always good to hear them speak on today's legal challenges. They tell stories that help you relate to understanding the laws of our land. They can also help to make sense out of the complicated. And it's always great to get information on how to integrate your responsibilities under the law into your business. And my guest, Rod Steffens, has that easy and common sense way to explain it. Rod has worked with the ASA Northwest Group for some time. He knows our business. He was engaging with a way to make the labyrinth of laws simple to understand. And we chat about handbooks, disability, terminations, not becoming a defendant, and the depth of legal knowledge that you need to know as your obligations are not only to federal law, but your state and city laws too. Hey, the main talking points are written for you at remarkableresults.biz/E254. Now that's my treat. Now, for the first time on the podcast and a great eye-opening interview, here's attorney Rod Steffens. Hey, a warm welcome to Rod Steffens from the Steffens Law Firm in Puyallup, Washington. Hey, Rod.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm great. I bet you're surprised that I said Puyallup right.
I know. How did you know how to pronounce it?
Yeah, well, all right, okay. So I spent some time up in Washington during my corporate days, and I think I had like 2 weeks learning how to say it in practice, so I sound so natural at it, but it took a lot of work.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. We always catch you guys that aren't from here by either mispronouncing Puyallup or mispronouncing Spokane.
That's true, too. That's another toughie. You're right.
Yeah.
Are those Indian heritage names?
They are.
Oh, great.
They are,
yeah. God, I love some of them old classic names. Hey, we got I got this request from Jude Larson, a friend of ours. And Jude said, hey, Rod is out there helping shops not get sued because of employment law. And I said, well, we got to have him on the show. So you're here. And you also work with ASA Northwest on some stuff.
I do. I do a lot of training for ASA Northwest, you know, and my goal here is to get shops to a point where, you know, they can do what they went into business to do, which is run a shop. You know, and I think that if you can take some preventative measures from the beginning, you can avoid yourself a lot of heartache in the long term. You know, and I tell shop owners, you know, what do you want to be, a shop owner or a defendant? You know, pick your poison. But being a defendant is not necessarily a good place to be, and it's a very expensive place to be. And most of the things that we see are problems that are easily remedied. It's just that shop owners have a finite amount of time, and they're trying to, you know, attend to marketing, running the shop, watching their crew do jobs, and then, you know, they don't think about the other things, the administrative things. And that's probably the thing, even in my own practice, it's a thing that you don't want to deal with. You just want to do what your chosen vocation is.
Got it. Got it. So I love what you just said, Rod. Don't be a defendant. Be a good shop owner. So what's the number one problem today?
Well, the number one problem I see that shops have is they don't have a plan really for how they're going to handle employee problems. And, you know, the plan can be, you know, part of the plan is having a handbook so that you outline, you know, the expectations for employees. Because, you know, the employees, you know, when they encounter a problem, they want to know how to handle it. And if you outline the expectations, then the employees know exactly where they stand. And you also set up valuable defenses in the event a claim is brought against you. And I see so many shops that, you know, they either don't get a handbook that's tailored to their business or they borrow one from someplace.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, many years ago, I had a guy come in and he had, you know, this beautiful shop manual that he borrowed from a taco company. And he still had the name of the taco company in there. And I'm like, man, you know.
Where's the common sense?
Well, I think people try to be frugal and they see something on the internet and they get it and they think one size fits all. And then they end up causing themselves more heartache than the money that they're saving. And you're right. There is a common sense component to this. And unfortunately, you know, those same shop owners, and, you know, I'm a loyal ASA guy because those guys have always taken care of me. And, you know, when they tell me I got to bring my car in for X, Y, and Z, I'm in. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, I'm a 3,000-mile oil change kind of guy, whether I need it or not. Got I'm it. There.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, they're good at giving that advice. But then when it comes down to the side of, you know, how do I run my business? And, you know, we got to think about that. That business is your dream. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason you're doing this, most of these shop owners are doing this because they have a passion for cars.
I love your analogy. And Yeah. You say, listen, you give me the advice. You tell me what I need to do to keep my car going. But take my advice for what you need to do to protect yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's like the old Fram commercial. You know, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. You know, when the guy talks about getting a proper oil change. And it's the same thing with legal problems. And the majority of these problems can be nipped in the bud. And the thing I like about, you know, the shops that I work with ASA is they're very proactive. They're, you know, and my experience with shop owners that I've dealt with, not just in Washington, but in other states, is that they're great folks. And they try to keep, you know, almost a family type of environment in their shop. And that's a good thing to do because, you know, you create a culture there where employees want to come to work because they feel valued. But every once in a while, you have an employee that, you know, is going to be a little bit of a problem. And you need to have a plan in place on how you're going to deal with it.
Do some shop owners make promises in the handbook they just don't need to make?
They do. They do because they don't have an understanding of what the law is. I saw one shop owner that, you know, was a shop that had less than 20 employees. Well, they were making promises that they were going to provide protections that are available under the Family Medical Leave Act that only applies to 50 employees. And you know, they did that because they copied a handbook from a larger company and they thought, well, if they have it, it must apply to us. Well, now they've just saddled themselves with additional things. Or sometimes in the manuals, the things that they'll do is they'll start making, you know, like really warm and fuzzy statements. You know, like, we're all one big family, and, you know, you're going to have a job forever as long as you stay here. And, you know, maybe I don't have a heart because I'm a lawyer, and some people accuse us lawyers of not having hearts. But, you know, the reality is those kind of warm and fuzzy statements, they belong at the team meeting, they belong at the company picnic or the holiday party, but they don't belong in a handbook.
Or the mission statement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Same with job descriptions. The job descriptions go into the law?
Well, job descriptions are a great way to protect yourself from potential claims down the road, especially if you have an employee that, you know, requires accommodation because they've been injured at work. And if you have a job description, now you have something that you can provide the physician to say, you know, can Joe come back to work or can Jane come back to work? Here are the, you know, the elements of their position and, you know, how can we have them come back to work? And a lot of times when I talk to employers and I use the word accommodation, you can just see this look in their eyes like, you know, oh my goodness, it's going to be dollar signs. And, you know, I talked to one guy one time who called me up and said, my employee needs accommodation. And I said to him, I said, well, did you talk to him? He said, no. I said, well, the law requires you to engage in what we refer to as the interactive process. Nothing special, just two folks talking about what the problem is. And I said, talk to your employee and find out what he needs. Well, the guy calls me back up and he says, he needs an orthopedic chair from the Office Depot. It was like $60. I'm like, buy it. Problem solved.
Done. Case closed.
Done.
You know, I love what you say. I mean, job descriptions can talk about lifting weights. You know, the person can lift, needs to lift so many pounds. And of course, then they can't come back to work if they're, even on a temporary basis, if they can't meet that description unless there's an accommodation. And I agree with you. Back in some of my previous experience, it wasn't hard to be able to bring someone back to work because, you know, every week you're paying a comp bill. You know, if somebody's willing to come back to work and you can get them into light duty, whatever that means. I think we have to be careful describing what light duty means. But in some jobs, that happens. That works.
And you keep the person on your team. You keep them plugged into what you're doing. And, you know, it's a win-win for the employer because let's face it, when you lose an employee, whether it's because of an injury or they quit, that's a big bite in your budget. Because hiring an employee is not a cheap proposition because, you know, most people think, well, you know, I'm just going to put an ad on Craigslist or in the trade magazine. I'm going to hire somebody. Well, yeah. Okay. That's step one. But after you hired them, how do you now imbue all this knowledge about how the business runs? And so if you've got a good employee, why not work to keep them? Because they have this institutional knowledge already. Mm-hmm. They know how you do things. They understand your customer base. And so a lot of times, you know, by trying to work with the employee, accommodate them, give them light duty, you keep valuable employees. And that down the road affects your bottom line in a positive way.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. What are the techs saying about your visit?
Every single time that I set up a training, I try to position the van inside the shop. You know, you're part of their house at that point. Whenever you set aside that time, you tell them that you're coming in, you're providing a lunch, and you're really bringing something of meat and value to the table. Once they get a taste of it, really, by the time you're done, they're asking, when can you come back?
When can you come back? Or, hey, what else you got in your bag of tricks?
Exactly. Exactly.
So the greatest outcome of your visit to a professional shop?
Is just to really make a difference in their everyday procedures to maximize the premium end of the product that's being installed. But ultimately, for me being a NIC shop owner as well, is to maximize their profitability in installing the part right the first time and having a happy customer. I always say happy customer is like a happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. Same thing goes with the customer.
I've heard that before. So you take a Wagner OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
First off, they're floored with the cut design on the front end. They'd never seen a brake pad like this before. And then you start to break it down into why it's cut the way it is and how it's application or platform specific, how the backing plates are no longer painted, they're zinc coated, and that's for tolerance level, so that way you don't have buildup on the ears and fitting into the hardware. I mean, you get into all the little nuances that they've changed around with that brake pad on top of the performance end of it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then once they physically try the brake pad, either on a customer's car or their own vehicle, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about the brake pad.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Good stuff, Rod. Thank you. Thank you so much. Let's go into, you just mentioned it a few moments ago, the leave law. Can you,
yes.
Maybe can you tie in a little disability with that? What are you seeing out there that the guys are stumbling on?
Well, you know, leave laws are really, you know, they're spreading across the country. Right now we have 7 states that have leave laws. You know, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, and then we have, I think it's Connecticut, Massachusetts, I want to say New Hampshire. They all have leave laws. And then you have cities around the country like Seattle and New York and Pittsburgh that all have their own leave laws. And so, but we're seeing a trend right now where you know, a lot of states are starting to implement these leave laws to give employees, you know, some time off of work and allow them to return, because a lot of small businesses don't provide sick leave. And so if somebody has to take time off to care for their kid, they can lose their job over it. And so these leave laws are kind of a new phenomenon. In Washington, we have an initiative process, which means that if you get enough ballots or enough signatures on a ballot, you can get something on the ballot in November to be approved as a new law. And that's how our paid sick leave law became enacted. And so because it goes on the ballot, that means the people that are voting are not just shop owners, they're employees. And I know from my days as being an associate attorney, you know, when I was an associate attorney, I wanted every benefit in the world. Okay. But when I became a member of management, it was a whole different story. And so when you have a leave law that's on the ballot, you know, the employees are going to vote for it. And so I think, you know, it's good for states to get out there and say, yeah, you know, we're going to have a leave law. You know, I think that probably where we're trending nationally is that most companies are starting to go to this, you know, paid time off type of formula.
Yeah.
Where you don't worry about whether it's sick leave. You don't worry about whether it's vacation pay. I'm giving you a certain amount of time that you earn, and you can use it however you want. And that way, you know, if you wake up one day and you need a mental health day, well, you take some personal time off.
Right. PTO.
PTO.
Good old PTO. Federal law doesn't overstrike the states or the cities. They serve precedent, right?
Right. Well, federal law and the states, there's some areas where federal law will come in and it'll override the states. But in most instances in employment law, you'll be looking to both state and federal law. For example, in Washington, we have a very strong law against discrimination. The federal law against discrimination, which is referred to as Title VII, that law applies also. So when we're advising employers or we're advising employees, we're saying, you know, you have these rights under federal law, but you also have these other rights under state law. So you have to be compliant with federal law, but then you also have obligations that you may have under your state law. And then if you're in a city, for example, like Pittsburgh, you may have to have, you know, additional obligations that you have to do to comply under the law for the city of Pittsburgh or the city of Seattle.
I can't help but think that if I'm small business and I've got an HR or I've got a handbook, I just gave my clue away. I gave my question away. Shouldn't you be taking that to an HR type company that knows the law?
One of the things that we did with my law firm is we spun off an HR company off of the law firm called Synergistic HR. And the reason we did that is because a lot of small employers, they don't have the financial wherewithal to maybe hire an attorney. but it's more cost effective for them to use an HR company. And a lot of times a good HR consultant can put you in the right direction. And I'm all about getting people to the right people. And, you know, I think that, you know, in my job as a lawyer, sometimes the best job I do, and it sounds counterintuitive, but it is to do myself out of work. Because when I'm doing myself out of work, I've solved my client's problems or I've connected them with a resource that's going to save them money and address their problem.
Prevention.
Prevention is the key.
I can't help but think that. That's the key. Spend the money, invest your time in making sure you're compliant. And you just said, I'd hate to talk myself out of work, but I'm sure you're busy.
This is an area where we're always busy. Even during the Great Recession, we were busy. It was just different things. You know, during the Great Recession, we were dealing a lot with, you know, non-solicitation and non-competition agreements and, you know, discharges. And now we're dealing with, you know, employment contracts and handbooks. So it's a never-ending cycle.
EEOC.
Oof. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Yeah, that's a toughie, isn't it?
You know, if you're under 15 people, you don't have to worry about the EEOC generally. Okay, so that's the threshold.
Okay.
Secondly, dealing with the EEOC isn't that difficult. Generally, if you go to if you get something from the EEOC, you can either take that to an HR representative or to your lawyer, and they can prepare the response for you. Right now, the EEOC nationally is slammed. I mean, we're seeing wait times on complaints or charges of discrimination that are filed that are taking over a year to process. So, you know, and a lot of times what happens with shops is and employers in general, they hear the words EEOC or, you know, something similar to that, and they freak out. And there's generally not a reason to freak out.
What does it mean that they're that backed up? Because it's just so easy to file a complaint if you were an employee?
I think it comes more down to funding and budgetary issues. One of my staff people had a very candid conversation with an investigator who was talking about the funding and the budget just isn't there. Yeah, we're seeing an increase in charges of discrimination that are getting filed with the EEOC. That's true, but it's not that significant that it would cause this kind of a backlog.
So I'm a shop owner and I work in the automotive aftermarket. I own a business. Where can I go for EEOC training?
You know, there's a lot of stuff that's available online. You know, EEOC website, which is EEOC.gov, has some really great Q&As on there and explanations of what your obligations are as an employer. You should have that bookmarked in your browser. You should have the Department of Labor's website, which is DOL.gov, bookmarked in your browser. In Washington, I tell my clients, have the Department of Labor and Industries website bookmarked in your browser because they handle wage issues, they handle leave issues, as well as, you know, work-related injuries. And I think that's true in most states. And so those are places where you can go quickly, you can get answers. And the simple questions, you know, sometimes that employers don't know, how long is a break? You know, and they don't know, or do I have to give a break? Or what, you know, what happens if I have somebody that's on a piece rate and they fall below minimum wage? Do I have to pay the minimum wage? All those little things, they're readily available on these websites with answers.
Rod, have you ever come across any issues where a shop owner was paying a bonus to a salaried or an hourly individual? Does that get complicated with wage and hour laws?
Wage and hour is one of the hottest areas in employment law right now.
Wow.
And the reason it is it's really complicated. A lot of times, you know, employers think that, you know, if I make CARM my employee, I'll just put them on a salary and I don't have to worry about paying overtime. And there are a lot of tests that you have to go through to determine whether or not, you know, CARM is truly a salaried employee or he's an hourly employee. So they get trouble there. Sometimes they get in trouble with the bonus issue. But primarily it's the classification issue in terms of hourly and salary. You know, there's a recent case that, you know, came down where, you know, one of the issues was, is are service advisors, hourly employees or are they exempt from the statute? And guess what? They're hourly employees. And I always tell employers, you know, if you want to save yourself some heartache, when in doubt, pay them hourly. When in doubt, whenever it's a close call, pay them hourly, because the downside of this is huge. And let me give you an example. I handled a case against a dentist probably 20 years ago. There was $1,000 at issue. $1,000. Okay? Because he didn't pay the $1,000, he now has to pay double damages. He has to pay interest on it. And by the time we had a judge rule in my client's favor, he had to pay an additional $31,000 in lawyer's fees.
Silence came over the room.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because in a wage and hour case or in a discrimination case, they have what lawyers refer to as fee-shifting statutes, which means if you as the employer lose, you get to pay the other side's attorney's fees. So take it out of the context of wage and hour, and let's now move into the realm of a sexual harassment case. Average verdict nationally is about $400,000. To try a sexual harassment case, you're going to probably spend $150,000 to $200,000 in attorney's fees. If you lose that case, guess what? There's an attorney on the other side who's probably spent $150,000 to $200,000 in attorney's fees.
Wait a minute. Plus the award? You're talking about $1 million?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. I mean, the solution to this problem is pretty simple. First of all, making sure we have the proper handbook, making sure we follow our policies and procedures, and talk to your insurance agent and get some good employment practices liability coverage. There's insurance for that. And so get the insurance. Maybe you have a $5,000 or $10,000 deductible, but that's a heck of a lot better than paying $250,000 for somebody's fees.
It sure is. This is great. Eye-opening stuff. Let me ask you about terminations.
Sure.
Have you ever, I can't wait for you to explain to me all the pitfalls there. Have you ever had to go to a client and help them with a termination?
I have. I have one client, and he's just a wonderful person. He can't fire somebody to save his life. And so whenever he has to terminate, he calls up his lawyer, and I've got to go in there and be the bad guy. And so even if I go in to see my client just to have lunch with him, you can see the whole staff running for cover. But, you know, terminations, you know, we laugh about it, but termination is a serious issue. I mean, most employers are really good people, and they don't want to terminate, and they don't see the signs early on. You know, they're not looking for, you know, they see that the employee is not performing, but rather than addressing the problem and getting rid of it, they think they can work with them. And you can only do so much with people. There's only so much training, and sometimes you just got to make the call. And a lot of times what happens is they let this drag out so long that by the time they get around to terminating, they're completely frustrated. And then they come in and they want to fire the employee. They want to fire every family member they have. They want to fire their pets. They want to fire anybody that's had any contact with the employee. And they sometimes say things that will come back to haunt them. So having a plan in place, and if you terminate an employee, I always have, you know, certain things that you need to be thinking about. You know, first of all, you know, do we know all the facts? I mean, if you're the shop owner, and you're getting a report from maybe, you know, one of your managers that says, you know, we need to get rid of Joe. Okay, well, do you have all the facts? Have you looked at his personnel file to see what the write-ups are? Are you writing him up just like you're writing up the other employees? Or are you writing up this employee, but other employees who are doing other things because you like them are not getting written up? That can raise the issue of discrimination in the workplace. Have you heard the employee's story? That's so important. You know, find out where the employee is coming from. Make sure you're basing that decision on facts, not rumors. And then when you make the decision, how are you going to handle it? How are we going to communicate to them? Who's going to communicate it to them? And what are they going to say?
Yeah. I'm a small business owner. And I need to do a termination. If I was involved with an HR company, I could literally pick up the phone and work with my coach or whoever would be assigned to me and say, hey, listen, here's my situation. Let me tell you what I got. They'll challenge me, ask me questions, and assess the risk. I guess what I'm saying is, listen, this person has to go. We're firing for attitude. And it culturally doesn't fit anymore. It's not right. Is that some really good advice to give someone, to please run the entire scenario by someone first?
I think it's an excellent idea because, you know, sometimes, you know, we all get a little bit of tunnel vision. And by talking to somebody else, you get some insights. Many years ago, I spoke at a seminar and this person attended a seminar and they heard me talk about at-will employment, which means that the employer has the right to fire you at any time for any reason, with or without cause, without consideration for how long you've been with the company, just like the employee can leave at any time they want. Okay, so he heard that and he had an employee that, you know, he wanted to terminate, so he terminated the employee. The problem was the employee had an EEOC complaint pending at the time. That's a big issue.
Oh, yeah.
Because now it looks like the termination is in retaliation for filing the EEOC complaint. You know, the other thing we see a lot is an employee takes some time off of work. You know, and a little bit of time off of work is a great way to expose what somebody's not doing. And so if they're taking it off for medical reasons, you find out that they're not doing their job. It's not a good idea the minute they show up to fire them because it looks like you're firing them for taking leave. Instead, take a look at it, sit down, talk to your HR advisor, talk to your lawyer, whatever the case may be, and develop a plan. How are we going to coach him? And what are we going to do? What kind of objective criteria are we going to use to get rid of him? And we're probably going to keep that. We're going to probably make sure that it has no resemblance to anything that would look like a retaliatory termination.
Great, great information. You had mentioned just a few moments ago about a 90-day probationary period that we all think, you know, well, you got 90 days. Is that something that puts relationships and people in a box and we shouldn't really be thinking about that?
That's a really good question. You know, the whole 90-day, you know, a lot of companies use a 90-day probationary period. Sometimes they refer to it as an introductory period. You know, the bottom line is the employee is an at-will employee. And when I talk to employers, I always tell them that when you put a 90-day probationary period in your handbook, think about what the employee is reading when they read that. And the way the employee reads it is, well, if I keep my nose clean for 90 days and they like me, I'm golden. And the only reason they're going to terminate me is for cause. And so why don't we just take that out? If the employee is a good employee on day 21, then you keep them, just like you would keep them if they're a good employee on day 91. Conversely, if they're a bad employee early on or 6 months down the road, you get rid of the employee. And don't worry about that. You sometimes, employers sometimes unnecessarily complicate matters. Now, I know a lot of lawyers would take, you know, would tell you that, you know, it's very good to have a 90-day probationary period. I happen to fall in the camp think that it just causes more problems than it solves.
Got it. Thank you for that. Hey, do you see what I'm holding in my hand?
Oh, yes, I do. Oh, yes, I do.
So to our listeners, who this isn't a video, this is audio, what I have in my hands, to my loyal listeners, is a cell phone. Is that becoming an issue inside of companies today?
Cell phone is becoming a huge issue. You know, when you think about cell phones, you know, those of us that grew up before the internet, I don't know if you remember those days, Carm, but there was a time when there was no internet. And the only type of phone we had was a hardwire phone. And that phone that we used to have when we first got cell phones, all it did was act like our normal phone at home, except for it wasn't plugged into the wall. And now that phone has become your personal computer, your database, you keep your records in there, you keep everything related to your life into that phone. And so in shops in particular, the cell phone has become a tool that a lot of techs use to access information online when they're working on a car. They need to get some information that the manufacturer may have published on how to fix a certain technical problem. They use your cell phone. Well, the problem with that cell phone is that, first of all, if the employee is not paying attention and they're messing with a cell phone, you may have an increased risk of injury. Secondly, the cell phone can also be used to do things like, you know, photograph your client list, photograph financial information. all the things that you as a business owner would consider to be proprietary. So now we get into this realm where employees want to use cell phones in the workplace, and they need to use them in some instances, but how do you protect the employer's interest? You know, because the employer has an interest in making sure that what's on that cell phone is your personal stuff and is none of our proprietary business information. And so we run into this, and it's a huge problem. And the courts are having a heck of a time trying to address those issues, because where do you draw the privacy line? And, you know, we find out from some studies is that there are employers out there who actually have policies that say, you know, you're going to use a company phone. Most employees want to use their own phone. It's too much hassle having two phones in your pocket. You just use one, the one that you're comfortable with. So you held up your, I'm going to call you out, you held up your Samsung. I'm not making a plug for iPhones here, Carm, but you held up your Samsung there. And, yeah. And you know, that phone is the phone that you know how to work with. You know where everything's at, so you want to use it. So as an employer, you need to have policies in place that say, you know, you can use your phone for these reasons. And if you leave, we have the right to get our information off the phone. And because you want to make sure that you get your own information off the phone, you want to be very careful about what you take off, because obviously you don't want to take somebody's photographs off. God knows what could be in the photographs. And but you just want to take your own personal information off the phone. Some companies will do this remotely. You know, larger companies can access the phone remotely and do that. The other thing with cell phones is that, you know, cell phones also, you know, there's a GPS on them. And you can see where people went. And, you know, with company-provided cell phones, you know, one of the problems is, you know, are they monitoring where the employee is? And what if the employee goes to lunch at the Bada Bing Club, if there is such a thing, you know? Or what if it's a female employee and she goes to Planned Parenthood? Where do you draw those privacy lines? And these are some of the tough issues we're dealing with cell phones, aside from the other part, which is, you know, techs taking cars on test drives and talking to their friends on the cell phone when they're driving, which to me is a big no-no.
So the advice here, I'm a shop owner, I'm a distributor owner, and I'm listening to this episode and I'm moved by it. Ooh, I didn't think about that cell phone. I'm not qualified to write that policy. I've got to get it from someone. I really need to call my lawyer, my attorney, my HR firm and say, listen, here's what I'd like to have. Can you help me with it? I mean, that to me, that's the next evolution. You can't do it yourself.
No, you can't. It's just like I can't rebuild my engine or my car.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you could tell me that I need a Hooper Scooper switch in my car, and I'd say, how many? You know, and so it's just like with everything else in life, you know, we all have our skills, and when you don't have skills in a certain area, you go to somebody else that has that skill, and you take advantage of it.
I have learned so much. Next round, would you come back and we could do this again?
I would love to. I would love to.
What a great service you have just done for the industry and for my listeners. Now, you author a blog called Inzozi? How do you say that?
You say it Inzozi. It's a Rwandan term that means dreams realized.
So what's in the blog? Just common sense lawyer stuff?
Common sense lawyer stuff. We try to talk about employment law from a common sense perspective, you know, because, you know, it's just like when I go in and see my service advisor and they start talking technical to me, you know, my eyes glaze over. Okay. And I see it with clients come in. I want people to understand, you know, this is what the law is. These are what your obligations are. Now, you and I may not agree with it, but it's the law and we've got to comply with it. And so what we try to do is explain what, you know, certain aspects of the law in a very common sense approach. And sometimes, you know, we'll throw a couple of zingers in there too, just because it feels good. And it's a blog. You can do that kind of stuff on a blog.
Yeah, you can. There's license, I think, to have fun with blogs, isn't there?
There is.
Inzozi.com, Inzozi.com. So I could subscribe.
You could subscribe.
Oh, cool.
In fact, if you subscribed, you'd get a free a guide on how to conduct workplace investigations.
Wow. Oh, great. Ooh, there's a great reason to get on. When you just said something about good commonsensical stuff, and it reminded me when we had our pre-call, you said, Carm, I'm just a beer and pizza kind of lawyer.
That was a compliment that a client gave me one time, and I thought it was a great compliment because it told me that, you know, the client trusted me, and the client, you know, I was explaining stuff to my client in a way that my client could understand.
I get it, and that's how I feel with you. It's been real down to earth.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. You've made me feel really comfortable, too. I haven't had a heart attack or anything on the show yet.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't think you have a problem getting up and speaking your piece. It was great. It was great. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Carm. I appreciate the opportunity.
Rod Steffens from the Steffens Law Firm in Puyallup, Washington. Good friend of ASA Northwest. Thank you, Rod Steffens, for this quick glimpse into employment law. There's so much to know, which is why every business person needs to have an important advisor, an attorney, or professional AR firm to help them always be compliant with our changing laws. Hey, thanks, Rod Steffens, for this quick glimpse into employment law. There's so much to know, which is why every business person needs to have an important advisor, an attorney, or professional HR firm. Help them always be compliant with the changing laws. If you want to see the show notes, go to remarkableresults.biz/E254. I've also included a link to Rod's blog in Zozi. Now, if you subscribe to his Common Sense blog, you will get an incident investigation report. Thanks for that, Rod. If you have an idea for an academy or a guest you feel I need to interview, please let me know. Email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz. Hey, thanks for listening. One of the best things you can do is share this content-rich resource with your friend, and I'm grateful and thankful for your support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time...